Hello and a very warm welcome to Centre Stage. Good to have you with us. Now, on Thursday last week, in a historic move, the United Nations General Assembly voted overwhelmingly to upgrade Palestine's status at the UN from observer entity to observer non-member state. And that despite strong opposition and numerous threats by Israel and the United States. Now, although this is a less ambitious promotion than a full membership, which was vetoed by Washington last year, it's still quite significant, isn't it? Judging by the amount of reaction and criticism coming from the US and Israel, they must have found this upgrade particularly important. Hello again and welcome back. Now, to further discuss this upgrade, two top guests join us today. Now, here in the studio, I'm delighted to be joined by an established and professional journalist. Mr. Golcamaz Hossain, it's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you very much. Your pleasure is mine.
Lovely to have you. Now, Mr. Golcamaz Hossain is actually an established journalist and top writer working with Tehran Times. Now, over the phone from a state in the southeast of the US, we're pleased to be joined by political scientist, Professor Nader Entisar. Welcome to Centre Stage.
Thank you.
Great to have you with us. Now, Professor Nader Entisar is professor and chairman at the Department of Political Science and Criminal Justice, University of South Alabama. Now, we'll be back after a short break, and we'll be discussing this historic move by the United Nations of last Thursday. So please do stay with us.
On Thursday, November the 29th, in a historic move, the 193-member UN General Assembly voted 138-9 with 41 abstentions to upgrade Palestine's status at the UN from observer entity to observer non-member state. Speaking before the vote, the acting Palestinian Authority Chief Mahmoud Abbas told the General Assembly that it was being asked today to issue the birth certificate of Palestine. The resolution sparked celebrations and made Palestinians erupt in cheers, hugging each other, setting off fireworks and chanting "God is great" in the streets of the Gaza Strip and Tel Aviv-occupied West Bank. Observers believe that the vote is a long-sought victory for the Palestinians, but an embarrassing diplomatic defeat for the United States and Israel, who did their best to stop the upgrade as they did last year, when the U.S. blocked Palestine's full membership bid at the U.N. Security Council using its veto power. Having earned the observer non-member status, Palestinians enjoy access to U.N. agencies and the International Criminal Court, where they could file complaints against Israel. The upgrade also allows the Palestinians to participate in debates at the U.N. and improve their chances for joining U.N. agencies. Following the Thursday historic vote, the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Susan Rice, referred to the resolution as unfortunate and counterproductive. She said, quote, "Today's unfortunate and counterproductive resolution places further obstacles in the path to peace. That's why the United States voted against it." Following the resolution, Israel promptly announced that it was planning to build 3,000 more settler units in the occupied West Bank. A couple of days later, Israeli Finance Minister Yuval Schneitz said the regime would not transfer the tax payments collected on behalf of the Palestinian Authority this month. Now, irrespective of whether such hurried moves are effective or not, they clearly demonstrate one thing: the amount of importance the Israelis themselves attach to Palestine's UN status upgrade.
Hello again and welcome back. Now, though not to a full member, Palestine's status at the UN was eventually upgraded to observer non-member from observer entity. And we know that Mahmoud Abbas referred to it as Palestine's birth certificate. And it was one of the most electrifying moments in the General Assembly's recent history. But Professor Entisar, does it change anything for the Palestinians on the ground, do you think?
No, unfortunately, you know, on the ground, nothing is going to change because the occupation status still is the same. Palestine, West Bank, Gaza remain under Israeli. Mm-hmm. Although Gaza, there's a difference between Gaza and West Bank, but nonetheless, they're under Israeli suzerainty and
right.
Israel, they cannot do anything without Israel's consent. So. Nothing is changed on the ground in Palestine, but it's a symbolic move for the Palestinians more so than substantive move at this time, because it increases the hope amongst Palestinians that the long sought goal of establishing a state of Palestine is at least one step closer to reality. It's still far, but nonetheless one step closer to reality.
Great, thank you very much. Now, Mr. Goldschmidt, do you think that Professor Entisar was saying that it's more of a symbolic nature? Do you share Professor's viewpoint?
Yeah, exactly. I agree with Dr. Entisar. It's a huge moral victory for Palestinians. But on grounds, nothing would change because Palestine is still an occupied territory.
Right.
Israel is controlling almost all of its borders. It doesn't have a proper economy. Its economy is being controlled by Israel. Palestine has secured a moral victory. Especially this, when this came after a military victory against Israel. You see, last month, actually, two things happened. One, Israel attacked Gaza,
right.
And the resistance fighters in Gaza, they showed to the world that with all these limited resources, they can defeat one of the mightiest army in the world. So it was this was a huge success. Then at UN General Assembly, 138 countries voted in favor of Palestinian resolution. And only United States, Israel, Canada, Czech Republic, and some minor countries, they could vote against the motion. So it shows that actually at UN General Assembly, United States and Israel were isolated.
Right.
So it's
there's one point that the U.S. ambassador actually to the UN, Susan Rice, mentioned. She said, quote, "This resolution does not establish that Palestine is a state." Isn't it really?
Doesn't, but it's one step closer to the final dream of establishing a Palestinian state on the occupied territories. In 1974, United Nations General Assembly accepted it as an entity. From entity to be a non-member observer state. State is mentioned, and it's a kind of actually de facto recognition of a Palestinian state. So it's a step closer.
Right.
Susan Rice is not correct on this. It's a huge victory.
Right. Great. Thank you very much. Indeed. We know that the United States and Israel had warned the Palestinians against seeking a state separate, suggesting that it could have financial implications for the Palestine and, of course, Palestinian Authority. But Professor Entisar, despite that, they went ahead with their upgrade demand.
Yes, I think they've come to the conclusion that what has been referred to as the peace process for many, many years now really is a dead process. It's not going anywhere, particularly under the current administration in Israel, Netanyahu's government. There is really zero chance of meaningful negotiations between the two sides. So that's why I think they took this step at this crucial juncture, because contrary to what the U.S. and Susan Rice said, really, the peace process had already died months ago, before the Palestinians took this step. It gives them, again, another avenue to air their case before international community, be it through the UN General Assembly or other international bodies.
Right, and we had the UNESCO case actually, in which also you know, Palestine was accepted as a member.
Yes, I mean that's one of the things about getting recognition as a as a non-member state by General Assembly is that it allows you to ask for the same type of status with other international organizations, as well as filing complaints, your brief report at the beginning of the program clearly indicated they can go to the International Criminal Court or other international legal bodies as a state.
Right.
And file complaints. Now, granted, you know, these types of complaints probably wouldn't go any further, but nonetheless, you know, a historical record will be established once Palestine is able to, you know, file legal complaints, you know, file legal motions.
Great. Thank you very much indeed for that. Now let's take a short break. After the break, we'll be talking about the role of the UN in all of this. And we know that UN actually has been warned not to, you know, pass this resolution. There have been some financial, you know, matters involved. So we'll be talking about that after this short break. So please just stay with Central Stage. Hello again, it's great to have you back with us. Now, UN diplomats and officials, including the president of the UN General Assembly, Rook Jeremic, are worried about the possible reduction of UN funding from the United States, which supply 22% of the regular UN budget due to the Palestinian issue. Jeremic has even said that the reduction would have dire financial implications for the United Nations. So considering such financial threats, Mr. Golchamas, I think it's a very bold move on the part of the United Nations, isn't it?
Yes, it is exactly a very bold move on the part of international community, actually. 138 countries is a real international community. The Western countries always love to mention that international community did this and did that. So what when they mean international community, they only mean certain Western states led by United States. But here is the international community, 138 countries voting in favor of Palestinians.
Right.
So I think it would be very difficult for the United States take such action against the United States, against the United Nations, when all of the international community is not going to approve
right.
it.
Right, yeah. Great. And Professor, so we know that the number of countries who oppose this resolution are quite limited. And basically, the name of these countries, and apart from Canada, Israel, and the US, the other countries actually are very tiny states, aren't they? So they're not very important nations who are against this resolution.
Yes, it's quite common actually in resolutions in the UN, these countries siding with the U.S. on almost every issue basically remain on the good side of the U.S. and continue receiving whatever aid they receive. You're quite right. And even if you look at the countries that abstain, really those are votes in favor. They just didn't want to further confront the U.S. on this issue, and they abstained. In reality, what they said by abstaining was that they favor this particular resolution. You're right. I mean, if there is any isolation on this issue, it's the U.S. and Israel and Canada, pretty much. You know.
Right. And if you look at the names of those who actually were opposed to that resolution, apart from the few number of important countries like Canada, we have some names: Marshall Islands, Micronesia, and we have two other countries. To be honest with you, I have problems pronouncing the names, because we have first of all Nauru and Palau. These are actually the other.
Panama.
So basically, these are not very Of course, each country is very important. But, I mean, in terms of the size, Mr. Golgamos, they're not very big countries who are against this resolution.
Total population of these countries is not more, a little more than 100,000 people only.
Right.
And most of these countries, Micronesia, Marshall Islands, Palau. Palau, they were actually under the United States occupation after the Second World War. United States occupied it. And in 1986, somewhere, I think, they got a kind of limited freedom from the United States. Still, they are under a kind of de facto occupation of United States. So they are not separate from USA. And they always need monetary assistance to survive and other stuff. So USA always manipulate their foreign policies. But
Canada was an important country, wasn't it? Probably these countries are small, but what about Canada?
Yes, Canada, you know, everyone now knows Canada is a total, a kind of turning into a total puppet of the United States. It's sad that it's losing its independent foreign policy and you know, following United States like a total subservient or something.
So you're just saying that Canada is probably just following the US on this issue.
Yeah.
Thanks very much indeed for that. Now, we know that, Professor Anderson, that the United States cut funding to the UN Education and Science Agency, UNESCO, last year after it admitted the Palestinians as a full member. So this, I mean, this threat, the new threat, is not an empty, idle threat.
It's a significant threat. But if you recall, several years ago, U.S. actually suspended its membership in UNESCO and then came back after a while. But there is no question that, you know, unless some other states or group of states step in and fill in the amount that the U.S. contributes to the Palestinian Authority, we would have, you know, a significant impact, negative impact on Palestinian economy, which is pretty much under siege anyway. But it would be devastating unless a country or a group of countries, and here's where, you know, the some of the richer countries in the Arab countries particularly can play a role. I'm not sure if they will or not, but they're capable of filling in the void left by U.S. eventual withdrawal of funding to the Palestinian Authority, but I'm not certain if they will do that.
Great. Now, we know that after, Mr. Golgamos, this happened, there was some reactions on the part of Israelis and, you know, the Americans. They referred to it as counterproductive. And so, basically, there was lots of reaction. And probably the reaction which drew lots of criticism was the Israeli plan to build new, you know, settlements. So, how do you read this sort of reaction by Israel?
It was actually a very ill-advised reaction on the part of Israel, because it would isolate Israelis further. See, look, the countries who were still maybe they are allies of Israel, they are also distancing themselves from Israel, especially on this settlement issue, because according to international law, all these settlements are illegal. These are occupied lands according to United Nations Resolutions 232. All these settlements are illegal. So this happens maybe first time that even Britain, France, Sweden, and another close ally of Israel, they called Israeli ambassadors in their countries and asked them what the hell is happening there, that it's a kind of a revenge they're taking on Israel.
Yeah. Great. Now, we know that, as we just discussed, Professor Anderson, Israel is planning to build 3,000 more settler units in the occupied West Bank after Palestine's status was upgraded at the United Nations. Basically, Mr. Golgamos was saying that probably This has drawn lots of criticism also from Israel's allies. But apart from that, probably gives Israel a leverage when it comes to future negotiations with the Palestinian Authority.
Yes, every time more land is taken over through settlement or other forms of confiscation, Palestinians have less leverage to negotiate. I mean, you have to be able to negotiate over something. If that an area you're negotiating over shrinks and shrinks and shrinks, then your leverage in negotiations begin to dwindle significantly too. And Israel knows that. Israel wants to place Palestinians in a position where and if they ever have to sit and negotiate over, let's say, boundaries of a Palestinian state, there won't be a viable area to create a viable Palestinian state. Mm. Palestine may exist in name, maybe have recognition by international organizations, but a viable state will not be able to function. And that's the ultimate goal of Israel. Very similar to what South Africa did during the apartheid era, where it created this internal sort of a Bantu areas and created countries that were not, you know, self-supporting, could not be self-supporting. And ultimately that would have been, you know, the case had this apartheid regime not fallen apart. And I think Israeli policy is similar to what went on in South Africa in the 70s and early 80s.
Right. Thanks very much for that. Now, we know that the observer state actually will grant Palestinians access to UN agencies, and everybody's talking about taking the Israel to that court, and we'll be talking about this right after this short break. So please just stay with Central Stage. Hello again, it's great to have you back with us. Now, the observer state status, or a status, will grant Palestinians access to UN agencies and the International Criminal Court. Now, where they could basically file formal complaints against the Israeli regime. And yesterday we had Nabil Shad, a senior member of the Palestinian Authority, who said that Palestinians would file a complaint at the ICC if the Israeli regime sticks to its recent plan to build thousands more settler units. But do you think, Mr. Goljamas, that actually Palestinians will do so in the near future?
I don't know they would be able to do so or not, but they should when they have an opportunity, especially after this upgrade status, they should use this opportunity. And there are numerous reasons for it, not on Israeli illegal settlements on Palestinian lands. Israel's recent war and the war in 2009, Israel committed numerous crimes against the Palestinians living in the Gaza Strip.
Right.
So Israel, Palestinians should take action and utilize this opportunity. They should take Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, Israeli Minister of Defense Affairs Ehud Barak to the International Criminal Court. Even if they do not win, there is a, you know, to take them to international court is a kind of, again, moral victory. And we have seen from this resolution that international community, there is a kind of climate building up that international community is in favor of Palestinians. They can, it can no longer tolerate injustice being done to the Palestinians. So they should file complaints, no doubt about it.
Great, yes. Thanks very much. Professor Antasar, everybody is talking about, I mean, right from the beginning and even before this upgrade request was taken to the General Assembly, everybody was talking about taking Israelis to the ICC. But do you think that, do you share Mr. Goljamas Hossein's view that probably Palestinians will do so?
Well, I'm not sure if they will do so or not, but they obviously now are in a much better position to make that decision if they want to, even if the case doesn't go any further than just simply filing a motion. Because, you know, if you keep filing motions of that nature based on legal ground, based on sound international legal foundations, ultimately what you're doing is that you're creating a dossier, a legal dossier over time against a particular state. And if a recalcitrant state that may not want to come and answer these charges, and then they put in informal pressure, not necessarily legal pressure, but informal pressure on Israel and on its supporters to ameliorate some of its policies and to respond at least indirectly to charges that are being brought against it in courts like ICC.
Right. But we know that, Professor, that the UK Foreign Secretary on Saturday said that he was extremely concerned about Tel Aviv's plans to build new settlements, and he advised the regime to reverse this decision. I think it's fair to say that the recent Israeli decision is highly controversial, even from the perspective of its closest allies. Why do you think?
Well, because, I mean, there's a long history of the UN resolutions and international legal principles that make it very clear that these settlements and expansion and occupation is illegal. It's an illegal move by the occupying state. You don't need to be a real expert in international law. It's just the elementary rules of international law and obligations of an occupying power. Very clearly it specifies the obligations of that power. And Israel has continuously ignored it. And therefore they have, you know, that the supporters of Israel, some of the Western countries are quite aware of this problem, and they don't want that to be highlighted continuously, because it would place them in a more awkward position publicly to support Israeli positions.
Right. Thanks. And we know, Mr. Guljam Hossein, that actually it's election time for Israel. And do you think that probably this has to do, I mean, the reaction on the part of Israel has, in one way or another, to do with the Israeli elections?
Which one, sorry?
The Israeli decision to build new settlements.
It is related to Israeli elections. Israeli attack, Israeli offensive in Gaza was also related to these elections. Actually, the reason is Netanyahu fiercely opposed United States President Obama's, re-election bid. But despite his fiercest opposition, Obama won re-election. So Netanyahu came under an intense pressure inside Israel that why he supported a losing candidate.
Right.
So Israeli Prime Minister was under all these pressures in order to divert attention from domestic pressures. He and his administration launched war on Gaza, the recent war on Gaza. They couldn't succeed. They got then another blow at United Nations General Assembly. So this new announcement of building, ratifying 3,000 settlements, and then they also made another announcement that they are reviving 1,600 settlements which were approved in March 2010, I think. So a total 4,600 settlements they are going to build. It's a kind of actually frustration showing that Israel is losing even wisdom to make proper decisions. Because this is a totally wrong move which is going to backfire.
There's one point that probably is very important, Mr. Guljam Hossein, and that point is that all Palestinian factions actually supported this move, and we had all countries almost unanimously the supporters of the Palestinians, and from all different sides, they supported. So probably that's quite unique, isn't it? I mean, you have all Palestinian factions supporting this.
It's a unique, really, that there is a You know, Western states, Israel, led by Israel and United States, they tried to create divisions among Palestinians living in West Bank and Al-Quds and then in Gaza Strip. But somehow the Palestinians know what they should do, what is the right thing to do. The right thing to do, if your enemy is so big as Israel and it has support of the United States, you have to show unity. So it's a pleasing movement that they are showing a unity on both fronts. During Israeli offensive in Gaza, Palestinian Authority, you know, spoke against the offensive at every forum. Right. And then Hamas, Islamic Resistance Movement of Hamas, they celebrated UN de facto UN recognition of Palestinian state.
Right, great. Now, we know that Palestine's full membership bid at the UN Security Council in 2011 was vetoed by Washington. Now, Professor Entisar, how do you see the prospects of another bid for full membership by Palestinians in future?
Well, I don't think that prospect is very, very realistic at this point, because ultimately a full membership will, it has to go through the Security Council, and we know that one country for sure will veto it. So that is out of the question at this time, for the near future at least. That's out of the question. You know, the legal steps that are required to get full membership are full of obstacles, and certainly the veto element will end that.
Great. Thanks very much. What do you think, Mr. Gojomerson? Do you think that there is... I know that the U.S. probably vetoed that.
Yeah, we all know that that United States is going to veto any movement, because in order to get full recognition of a state, the movement has to, any motion has to go through United Nations Security Council, and the U.S. has vetoed, no doubt, that United States would veto. What I kind of feel that during Obama's second term, there might be something in store that we are not seeing it now, because you see, he is known, Obama is, you know, is known a kind of anti-Netanyahu person. So maybe, I don't know, but it should be somehow that maybe he might take a kind of action that at some stage. It is a faint maybe possibility, but maybe United States would decide to take a wise action or not veto and the move, and not you know, earn the animosity of the whole international community.
Right. Thanks. Now, Professor Entisar, we know that probably one of the things which is quite interesting is that we know that the U.S. is actually paying about 22% of the checks of the United Nations, and the United States has actually had warned the UN against passing this resolution, but despite that warning, the UN went ahead. So I think this is one of the moments where the majority of the UN member states, they decided to coalesce their positions on this issue. It's a very extraordinary moment in the history of the United Nations, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, unfortunately, that's part of the structure of the United Nations. United Nations, as you know, was set up at a very special time in world history. And it definitely is in need of significant internal changes and restructuring. You know, this is still an organization, an international body that reflects the international, constellation of forces and powers that were in existence right after World War II in the 1940s. And we are still stuck in that era, unless there is a significant change in UN's structure itself. There's really not much hope in terms of what the Palestinians can do beyond what they've already done.
Right. Thanks. Now, let's talk a little bit about Turkey's role in this, because we know that Turkey has been assuming a high profile when it comes to the recent developments in the region. Turkey has actually strongly condemned the move, and the Turkish foreign ministry issued a statement, and Mr. Golcan also said, I want to quote that. He referred to Israel's illegal settlement activities. They said that they intentionally destroy, destroy the groundwork, end quote, laid for establishing lasting peace in the region. So Turkey's position is, I think, quite significant, isn't it? And it's quite vivid what they really want to say.
Yeah, Turkey, since 2010, when Turkish aid ship, a convoy of aid ship led by Turkey was attacked by Israel, and nine Turkish peace activists were killed. Turkey did take a bold stance against Israel and condemned its human rights violations in Gaza, in West Bank, in Al-Quds, everywhere. And Turkey played a major role in actually isolating Israel from the international community. And Turkey did it, of course, for several reasons. One is that it wants to get more recognition among the Arab states, among the Muslim world, it was something that benefited Palestinians, Turkey then downgraded its diplomatic relationship or military relationship with Israel. So the movement, all this development is praiseworthy, that we should commend Turkey for doing this.
Right. Thanks very much. Professor Entisar, in about 30 seconds, how do you see Palestine, the upgraded Palestine, actually, 5 years from now?
Well, unless the Palestinian authority does something with this upgrade, rather than just sit on on this symbolic move, I don't see anything moving on the ground. They have to take advantage of this upgrade. That's, again, as I said, at the minimum, try to use the international legal institutions to bring up Palestinian grievances, even though those grievances may not go anywhere legally, but they have to keep the name Palestine and the issue of Palestine in the limelight.
Great, thanks. And what's your prognosis, Mr. Golcan?
Yeah, I'm also not that hopeful, but the hope is that we live by, and still we expect there kind of some kind of positive development on the side of Obama administration, actually. So maybe their wisdom would prevail, and they would not anger the international community and do something for the Palestinians.
Great. Thanks very much indeed. I hope that things get better, particularly for those who are suffering in Gaza Strip.
Thank you.
Sorry to end it there, but we are out of time, unfortunately. But before I go, I'd like to thank again my top guests. We had Professor Nader Entisar, Chairman of the Department of Political Science and Criminal Justice at the University of South Alabama. And of course, we had Mr. Golcan Hossain, established journalist and top writer working with Tehran Times in the studio. Thanks very much indeed for coming on, for talking to us, and of course, for those insights. Now, until next week, from me, our guest today in the studio and also over the phone from the US, and of course, the rest of the team, it's goodbye for now. Thanks very much indeed for watching, and thanks very much for your time and attention. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Great to have you with us. Thank you. Thank you.